Acts chapter 25 for today, verses 1 through 12, beginning at verse 1. Therefore, after Festus came into the province, after 3 days he went up into Jerusalem from Caesarea. And the high priest and the chief of the Jews, that is the leading men of the Jews, gave information to him against Paul. And they were urging, notice the imperfect tense, they were urging him, who's your modal participle, they were urging him by asking for a favor against him, that is against Paul, so that he might send for him into Jerusalem, making an ambush that they should put him to death along the road. Therefore, indeed, Festus answered that Paul should be kept in Caesarea, and that he himself was about to go quickly, that is, back to Caesarea. Therefore, he says, the powerful men among you, after having gone with me, if there is anything improper in this man, let them accuse him. Now, after he spent there more than 10 days amongst them, after having gone down unto Caesarea, the next day, having sat upon the throne, notice it's the word bema, which means this is an official Roman tribunal. He commanded that Paul should be brought in. And after he arrived, or came, the Jews, which had come down from Jerusalem, surrounded him, bringing many and weighty accusations against Paul, which they were not able to prove. And notice the word able, iskuon. It's not the normal word dunamai for ability or capacity, but the word for strength. So, in other words, at this judicial hearing, their presentation had no strength. There was no, they had no strong presentation of their case. While Paul was defending himself, that neither toward the law of the Jews, neither toward the temple, neither toward Caesar, did I do any sin. And Festus, desiring to obtain a favor with the Jews to himself, when he answered Paul, he said, do you wish, after having gone up to Jerusalem, there concerning these things that you should be judged before me? And Paul said, I am standing. Notice again, the word standing is a perfect tense. I am and have been in a condition of standing. This would be official legal position. He says, I am standing before the judgment seat of Caesar. And again, it's the bema seat of Caesar. Of which it is necessary that I should be judged, or where it is necessary that I should be judged. I did the Jews no wrong or injustice, as also you very well know thoroughly or completely. For if indeed I am doing injustice, and I have done something worthy of death, I am not refusing to die. But if there is nothing of which these are accusing me, no one is able to deliver me up to them. I am appealing to Caesar. Then after Festus took conversed with the council, he answered, you have appealed to Caesar. Before Caesar, you will go. And we're following a lot of historical information. about the plight of Paul. Within it, we see the hand of God, and within it, we also see Paul's relationship with the Lord and Paul's response. Now, last week, in chapter 24, we studied about Felix. Felix was the governor at the time, and Paul was delivered down to Caesarea to stand before him because the Jews in Jerusalem, before the Sanhedrin, their official council, the Jews were unable to convict him or bring any charges against him. So they shipped him off to the governor, Felix, in Caesarea, which is north of Jerusalem, which was the official city of the residence of the governor, that is the Roman procurator of the province, the representative of Rome. Now it is interesting because the governor had to represent Rome and its interest and control over the Jews, but at the same time, the main issue for the governor was to make sure that no riots or insurrections took place against the Roman government. And so Felix, known in his history to be a very cruel man, even putting down insurrections, he would slaughter Jews by commanding the soldiers to do so. And it was interesting that after complaining to Caesar Nero in Rome, the Jews won by having Felix replaced. And so in verse 24 of chapter 24, that certain days that Felix came with Drusilla, his wife, she being a Jewess. And as I said last week, this is an interesting episode about how all these people fit in together. Drusilla can either be one of two people. Either the granddaughter of Cleopatra and Antony, which she is not, because we're told that she being a Jewess, that would mean that she is the sister of Herod Agrippa II. And she was also the former wife of a man named Azizus. But Luke does not go into that story, but now provides the fact that she has a storied past. She is a Jew. She has been married. She divorced her husband in order to be with Felix. So Drusilla and Felix, they come into town and they heard Paul. And Paul was given a defense concerning righteousness and self-control and judgment which is about to come. And when Felix heard about righteousness, being right with God, when he heard about self-control, now he's talking to a man who, in order to satisfy his physical human appetites, when an uprising comes in, he just goes in and slaughters people. He doesn't arrest them. He doesn't put the insurrection down. He just kills them. Secondly, if he sees somebody else's wife, he does whatever is in his power, legally and otherwise, to obtain her as his wife. And so he talks to him about being right with the Lord. Secondly, self-control, which obviously Felix doesn't have. And thirdly, the judgment, which is about to come. And when he listened to Paul, he became afraid. Send him away. Say, that's it for now. Go. When I have an opportune time, I'll send for you. And at the same time, he was looking for a bribe from Paul so that he could release him. In other words, if all Paul did was provide a bribe or one of the people in his company, you know, Christians get together, love offering. You know, every Christian's heard of a love offering. Get together, have a love offering, give it to Felix, and Paul's released, right? Wrong. Won't do it. It is interesting how Christians, in Paul's particular instance, that not only he and the other believers went according to the law. They wouldn't do anything dishonest. They wouldn't do anything to shame the gospel, even if it meant death, because that's basically what Paul's doing. We will see in his response to the accusations today that he He's willing to die if he's done something wrong. But if he hasn't done anything wrong, then he says, you can't deliver me up. So he's putting every judge, every person that he sits before, on the spot. Instead of Paul being on the spot, basically they are on the spot. Paul is the prisoner, and just like it is with Paul. Paul's the prisoner, but he writes a letter to Timothy, the pastor, because the pastor, Timothy, is thinking of stepping down from pastoring because Christians are just all over the place. They're a mess. There's all kinds of false teachings and doctrines, and they didn't even have radio or television in those days. And they still had Christians following weird teachings and bringing it into the church. So Timothy was just ready to say, forget this. But Paul, who's sitting in a prison, encourages the pastor to continue on. Just preach the word. Just give the word as it is. And, you know, if people reject the truth, they reject it. It is your job to minister the truth. Period. So it is interesting from Paul's position is that he has worse circumstances than the people that he's ministering to. And yet he has to encourage them. Instead of them encouraging Paul, Paul has to encourage them. Saying, you think you have it rough? Come and sit here in the prison for a while. You'll be happy to get back to Ephesus to pastor. So it is interesting that Paul will not choose a bribe. He will not choose an easy way out. We've already seen that back in Philippi when the earthquake opened the jail doors, and I would have taken it as a miracle from God that released me. I would have claimed victory in Jesus, right? But Paul stayed in the jail cell because he knew that that jailer would lose his life, and he wanted to be a testimony to the jailer. Interesting that Paul's approach to life is not to take the easy route out or even the miraculous way out of tough circumstances, but rather represent the Lord in them. And as we have seen, as we've read today, and as we've seen in other instances, though Paul is the prisoner, it's everybody else that's on trial, not Paul. Paul is serving the Lord. He's testifying for Christ. So it's really how one views one's own circumstance. And how we view our own circumstances is how we're going to approach the Lord. And how we approach the Lord is going to determine whether our relationship with Him is going to be healthy or not, whether our lives are going to be effective for Christ or not, or whether we're going to be constantly coming to the Lord and complaining about everything and looking to get out of everything. And if God doesn't do it, then we're going to become bitter, you know. If anybody had the right, human right, it would be Paul. He's an innocent man, but he takes it as an opportunity to minister for Christ. So, over a period of time, Felix is calling Paul back in and listening to him for a while, hoping to have a bribe. And when he gets tired of listening to the gospel, he sends him back. But there's a participle that's placed there that he often called for Paul for the reason of hoping for a bribe. Well, after a couple of years, Felix was replaced. In fact, the official language in verse 27 of chapter 24 is that Felix received his successor. So this is his way of stepping down, his way of giving up. Caesar Nero, though Caesar Nero had a good reputation at the beginning of his rule and reign, which would be at this time, later he would not. But Caesar Nero replaced Felix at the request of the Jews. So now Porcius Festus is now arrived and is taking his place, and he will serve for 2 years. He will die in office. And within that 2 year period, he is aggressively attempting to appease the Jews. Remember, Felix has been replaced. Here's a man the Jews said is immoral. He's impulsive. He doesn't do anything according to the law. He just kills people if they riot. Don't even know if those were the people in the riot. He just kills people. That's how he handles situations. So he's impulsive. And now Porcius Festus has been called to patch things up with the Jews, rule over them, but at the same time appease them. So now we realize that after 2 years, at the opening of chapter 25, that after 2 years, when Porcius Festus, in fact it says in verse 1 of 25, verses 1 through 5, had to do, we've entitled it, The Ambush Revived. The ambush of Paul revived. Because remember, back in chapter 23, verse 12, they laid wait to ambush him and tried to get Lysias to bring him out, and instead they gave him a soldiers to protect him and took him down to Caesarea. So the Jews want to kill him. Therefore, Festus, after he came into the province, so now that's just a phrase that says he came and took over, and he is now the governor. After 3 days, so he was only in office for 3 days, before he went up to Jerusalem from Caesarea. So right away, after 3 days, he's going to Jerusalem to hold court for the Jews and try to get things straightened out for the Jews. Well, the chief priest, or the high priest and the chief men amongst the Jews gave him information against Paul. And they were urging him, in perfect tense, continuously, by asking a favor against Paul, so that he might bring him, that he might call for him to Jerusalem. Because remember, Paul's back in Caesarea, and Festus is now in Jerusalem. He says, just do us a favor. See, because he's looking to do the Jews a favor. And the Jews are looking for appeasement. It's kind of interesting that after 2 years, the Jews have not forgotten. After 2 years, the issue that's still on the front burner is Paul. Not that he's broken the law, but he's preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ. You would think after 2 years they'd say, oh yeah, we remember him. But they have kept this issue alive. And now when Porcius Festus is now in Jerusalem, they give him information against Paul and they ask for a favor, that he might call for him to come to Jerusalem. While they're making an ambush in order that they might kill him along the road. Same thing that happened back in chapter 23. They're trying to say, look, just call for him. We'll take care of the rest, okay? Just summons him to come to Jerusalem. And while he's on the road from Caesarea to Jerusalem, we'll be making an ambush and we'll kill him. Settle the whole issue. But Festus, when he answered that Paul is to be kept in Caesarea, and that he himself, that is Festus, is about to go back and depart to go back to Caesarea, and that the powerful men, the strong men, the men of influence amongst the Jews, should go with him. It's kind of interesting that the way the language is placed in the Greek text, it makes it very interesting because Festus is no dummy. Number one, he made a decision for Paul to be guarded and kept in Caesarea rather than give in to the wishes of the Jews. Well, if he's looking to appease the situation, why not just call for Paul? He says, no, Paul is to stay there. He still has a requirement that he's placed upon himself to treat Paul as a Roman citizen for what Paul is. He has an obligation to protect him. He's not just some Jew He's also a Roman citizen. So Festus has to make sure that Paul is charged and taken to trial according to the Roman law. So he knows about this plot. Secondly, he says, the leading men amongst you Jews go with me. So, in other words, if they're with him, there can be no funny business. He's right there with them. They can't plot another ambush or plot another way to overcome Paul if he says, let your leading men come down with me. But after they come down with me, if there is anything inappropriate, atopos means out of place, in this man, let them accuse him. So after he spent more than 10 days there, after going down into Caesarea the next day, after having sat upon the judgment seat, he commanded that Paul should be brought. And after he arrived, or after he came, the Jews who had come down from Jerusalem surrounded him, bringing many and weighty accusations or charges against Paul, which their argument had no strength to prove anything. Same old thing. Even after 2 years and a couple of trials, there are no witnesses. None. They had a professional orator or lawyer, Tertullus, stand up and say, this man has caused an insurrection amongst the Jews throughout the habitable world. You know, kind of exaggerating a little bit, but trying to make the point. Because the only thing a Roman official is going to be concerned with is insurrection and riot. They don't care about doctrine. They don't care about the Jews' religious issues. So they made Paul be a leader of a riot. A zealot. But in all the presentations, and here we have another set of accusations against Paul, they are not able to prove anything. It's just empty words. The words have no substance. There's no strength to their argument. While Paul, when he gave his defense, he said three things. Neither toward the law of the Jews, nor toward the temple, nor toward Caesar, did I sin anything. He said, I didn't sin. Interesting, because the word to sin, hamartano, is also a judicial term. So when you couple missing the mark with the judicial term, means that you don't line up with the law. You fall short. You have violated the law. You've broken the law. You're a criminal. So when it says about the human race that all have sinned and come short of the glory of God, basically, spiritually, we were all criminal. We have fallen short of God's holiness. We are spiritual violators of God's justice system. That's why we can never, ever compare ourselves to any kind of religious system nor any kind of humanitarian goodness. It must be compared to God's justice system. God is a judge and He has a judicial system. And His system has already proclaimed the notice that all have fallen short and are criminals. So what are you going to do about it? Not only does he present that we are spiritual criminals and violators of God's law, but he also provides the requirements to pay for the penalty for that. So not only does he make the justice system, which is impossible for us to keep, but he also provides the fulfillment of the requirement himself. Well, how can anybody argue against God? How can anybody say, well, God allowed sin and God allowed me to be a sinner? Hey, he also provided a way back. You don't have to provide yourself a way back. God has provided the way. He has set the high standard, which we all fall short of, but Jesus Christ met that standard for us. So we are clothed in His righteousness. Another judicial term. I am right with God because Jesus is right with God, not because I am. It's because Jesus stands in my place before God. You ever had dreams of one day standing before the Lord, what you would say, or even hear sermons of people saying, yeah, what are you going to say when you stand before God if you were to die today? And he starts, you know, this is your life, and he starts to start the film. Every deed, every action, every thought played. What would you say? You don't know how many sermons I had prepared over the years in my dreams. What would I say? Let me see. Wasn't that bad, or other people have done worse, and yeah, sorry for that, and you know, we go on and on. The only position that we hold before God when we stand before God and God says, I am holy, I am righteous, and you are not. If he were to ask me, which he won't, but if he were to ask me, what gives you the right? Why do you deserve to come into heaven? The only answer is for me to point to Jesus. Because of him. I've received him. I belong to him. I've surrendered my life to him, the righteous one. So I enter into heaven not because of anything that I've done, but because of everything that Jesus has done. Jesus is the only one who is acceptable to the Father. He's the only one who is well pleased to the Father. So, you know, you get a job. The boss's son works for the company, works right next to you. Yeah, buddy up to the son, you know. This is a two-way thing between God the Father and God the Son, and God the Spirit is out drawing people to this relationship. Since God the Son is the only one acceptable to God the Father, he's the one I want to know. I'm with him. You know? What are you doing here? I'm with him. You have no right to be here. You're right, but I'm with him. I'm in him and he is in me. Now, he's never going to leave me. So that means if God the Father rejects me, who goes with me? See, he rejects his son in me. And so because God the Father receives his son, I'm received by the Father. I'm just along for the ride. I get in, and the gates open for the son, and just right before the gates close, I slip in. Because I'm with the Son. But there isn't anything that I have done. So it's interesting that Paul would use the word harmartano, perfect tense of harmartano, to sin. I have not sinned anything toward the law of the Jews, toward the temple, nor toward Caesar. But I haven't sinned against Caesar. I haven't fallen short of any requirements of Caesar. Up to this point, there was not a Caesar worship. So Paul could say, I've kept the law. I haven't violated anything Caesar said. But when you make those three presentations and say, I have not fallen short in any of these three areas, that's a pretty powerful presentation. And here's a man saying, I'm telling you this, and I call again on my accusers to present the proof. So, Festus, desiring to obtain a favor from the Jews, he asked Paul, he says, do you desire, after having gone up to Jerusalem, he's in Caesarea now, do you desire that you should be judged there concerning these things by me, So he's kind of appeasing two people. He says, do you wish? Now see, that shows that Festus is sensitive to the fact that Paul is a Roman citizen. He didn't order him. He says, do you wish? Do you desire? Do you want? After going up to Jerusalem to be judged concerning these things, but then he says, by me. I'm going to be in charge of the tribunal. It'll be an official Roman tribunal, but it'll be in Jerusalem. Paul's response was, I am standing, have been all this time, before the judgment seat of Caesar. You're the official Roman representative. I am standing in front of the official Roman tribunal, where it is necessary that I should be judged. I'm a Roman citizen. I'm right here. Neither did I do any injustice, any of the Jews injustice, as you yourself well know thoroughly. For if I am doing injustice or I have done anything worthy of death, I am not refusing to die. So he says, I'm standing right here. Go ahead, pass sentence. Even if I have done something unjust that is against the law, or I have done anything worthy of death, I'm not refusing to die. That is to say, I'm not going to fight it. Pass sentence. Judge me right here. How many trials does it take? How long does it take? But if, and notice this is a first-class condition assumed to be true, but if there is nothing of which these are accusing me, and then basically that's what he's saying, since there's nothing to it, and they've had 2 years to prove it and still can't, no one is able to give me up to them. I am appealing to Caesar. Then after Festus conversed with the council, he answered, you have appealed to Caesar. Before Caesar, you will go. Now this is Paul's undoing. And yet at the same time, it's the hand of God. Many people get involved in second-guessing Paul's decision, but it's actually the hand of God. By appealing to Caesar, that's his right as a Roman citizen to stand before Caesar's judgment seat in Rome. But Paul sees the direction here. Festus wants to appease the Jews. He wants to go down and hold trial there and let the Jews try to try him. And Paul is saying, we're holding it right here. There's the Jews. What do I have to go to Jerusalem for? But Paul also knows that up to this time there have been two plots to kill him. Paul knows he's not getting out of Jerusalem, going to get there, or even get out. You know what's worse that could happen than any of this? Is that he go to Jerusalem and Festus release him. You're free to go. Like, what does he face? No protection? Paul realizes that if he releases me in Jerusalem, I'm a dead man. Now, Paul not fearing of death, why would Paul choose to take a route where he would not die if he doesn't fear death? Anybody come up with an answer? God says you're going to Rome. Would it matter to Paul? I mean, if God told Paul, you've testified in Jerusalem, you will die in Jerusalem, Paul would be the one to say, well, I guess this is the way it's going to be. So, yeah, let's go to Jerusalem, have a trial. Because I'm supposed to die there. You know? But Paul's going, if I go to trial in Jerusalem, if I get tried, I'm not going to Rome. If I get released, I'm definitely never going to make it to Rome. So I appeal to Caesar. Now, at the end of chapter 26, we learn that Festus is going to tell King Agrippa, I would have released him had he gone to Jerusalem. But the guy appealed to Caesar, and he's a Roman citizen. What could I do? I can't refuse him, so it kind of solves a problem for him too, because he can tell the Jews, well, he appealed to Caesar, and he's a Roman citizen. I didn't do it. I'm only doing it according to Roman law. So I'm shipping him off to Caesar. And Paul would stand before Caesar Nero. Of course, that is where Paul would meet his death. And we'll talk about that when we get to chapter 28. But it is just interesting to me, as you follow the storyline of history, rather than just seeing historical boring facts, actually read the hand of God in this and look at the way Paul responds to his circumstances. And why he makes the decisions that he does. God says, I'm going to Rome. So whatever choice I have to make to get to Rome. And that's all Paul thinks about. He doesn't think about, well, if I push this to the Supreme Court, I might win. He's not even thinking about that. So basically, he preaches the gospel. He defends himself by presenting the truth, and by presenting the fact that his accusers have nothing against him. And this seems to be a political motivation by whoever is governor, whether it's Felix or Festus, that they want to appease the Jews so there's no more uprising. Festus wants to keep his job. He doesn't want the Jews to go to Rome and file complaint against him like they did with Felix. So, perfect solution for everybody. Ship him off to Rome. But while he's still there, while he's still in Caesarea, he still has opportunity because now royalty is going to visit before he's shipped out. And they say, we heard about this guy. This is becoming quite a case that's being heard by people from all over the land. I want to hear him too. And the things that Paul has to say are very interesting. I like following the historical accounts of Paul. I like studying about the man. I like to study how he thinks, how he responds, how he reacts to circumstances. He has a very personal relationship with the Lord, and the Lord is so faithful to appear to him and give him the confirmation and the leading that he needs. Because Paul is a surrendered servant to Christ. And all Paul wants to do is serve the Lord. Whether it's through life or through death, Paul said, may Christ be magnified in my body. That's all he wanted. To this type of believer and servant, his life is effective for Christ. Because he looks for the Lord and his purposes in everything. Close with prayer. Our Heavenly Father, again, thank you for another time to spend with Paul. We pray that your Spirit would bless our hearts, bring us to maturity, to the realization, the understanding, the sensitivity, the perception of the Lord in all of our circumstances, that we might seek Him and serve Him and represent the gospel in the various ways in which God places us in. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.